हरिः
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so Nyaya Sutras, then Sutra 1, 2, 3. Yes, in the second day, though today is the third day, but we're discussing the second day. Jalpa mentioned in the previous sutra becomes vitanda when the opponent has no care for establishing any thesis of his own. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. An objection may be raised. Quote, then, why not define vitanda as that jalpa which is without any antithesis? Pratipaksha hina. In answer to this, we say, this cannot be so defined, because the antithesis of the person employing vitanda are simply the propositions put forward for the refutation of the other's proposition. But after declaring it to be his position, he does not substantiate any thesis. Therefore, the word of the wording of the sutra should be left as it is. Right, because he may give opposition, because their point is oh, if he's giving the opposition, but having taken that position of opposition, he doesn't then try to establish his own understanding, you know, what is his idea and all that. They just want to defeat you, that's all. So in the first one, in Vada, then the two parties want to find out the truth. So they're discussing it from different angles until that truth comes out. And so then they're going to discuss, oh, you can look at it like this, or what about this? And then in this shloka it says this. They go on, but they're looking for the truth. So it's not that they're specifically attached to a specific thing, or you have like that, the teacher-student, and so then the teacher keeps talking until the student understands. So he's not trying to defeat the student, he's trying to get them to understand. When you deal with jalpa, it's just both parties want to win. They have a position, they argue it, but they only argue in as much as support, you know, how you say, supports their own philosophy and defeats the other person, but they're not actually trying to see if there's some truth beyond what they understand. And then in the third one, they just try to defeat the other opponent. They're not even trying to establish their own opinion. Then what is this? Because then it's indented, irrational reasoning. Who is this by?
It's by Suhatra Maharaj.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't put the heading on.
Okay. Irrational reasoning, vitanda, is irrational reasoning. Oh, irrational reasoning. Okay, you put a colon, yeah. I was going to say irrational reasoning. Is irrational reasoning, right? You know, specifically, it is argumentation that is aimed exclusively at refuting or destroying an antagonist position, and that is not all, and is not at all concerned with establishing or defending one's own position. It is mere destructive criticism of the views of one's opponent. Whereas in the wrangling, both the exponent and the opponent try to establish their own position. In irrational reasoning, like wrangling will mean jalpa, right? In irrational reasoning, either or both tries to refute the other's position instead of establishing his own. So you could actually have it where both parties are just trying to win an argument, though they're not establishing any position. This usually occurs when one or both parties realize that his own case is weak and that he cannot defend his point of view. Consequently, he irrationally attacks the other's case with destructive intent. Right, so that would be if you're dealing with those that are thoughtful, they thought they had an idea. So then you're going to see is either they don't, they just like to argue, or they come up and then they find out that their side doesn't have meaning. You know, so in the first one, they're just arguing, means they don't understand what you're saying, and they don't understand what they're saying because they have nothing to say. So technically, they're on the platform Nigrahastana. The second one, I mean, what Maharaj just mentioned here is that, again, they've been defeated. They have nothing to say, but at the same time, they're not going to accept defeat. So again, it's Nigrahastana, like that. But, you know, it becomes that. Well, the other one, it starts with that. Riti, after discussion of the three forms of debate, Hetabhasha, which is the 13th Padartha, is described next. The next few sutras elaborate on the five types of Hetabhasha. And so then Hetabhasha will have these different. Okay. Sutra 124. The fallacies of a reason, Hetabhasha, are the irregular or erratic, Savya, Pichara, the contradictory, Virudha, the counteracted, Prakarana, Sama, the unproved, Sadhya Sama, and the mistimed, Kalatita. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. Those which are not real reasoning, Hetu, because of not possessing the real characteristics of a Hetu, but which appear as if Hetu, because of their similarity with it, are called Hetabhasha. Right? So it's Abhasha. It's Hetu Abhasha. That it looks like reasoning, but it's not actually reasoning. So you get that a lot these days, that people are trying to present something, but they try to present it as if it's logical, but what they say is actually not logical. Riti, His Holiness Sahotraswami. Hetabhasha means irrational argument. It is reasoning that appears to be valid, but is really unfounded. This specious reasoning is a fallacy of inference and is therefore discussed later in this chapter in the section on inference. Right? So when you get into inference, then these will be parts of that. But what's being pointed out is that just the concept that it's not according to reason, that itself is the concept. And then how people will use it and all these different things, that will be a technique, right? Sutra 125, the fallacy called irregular or erratic, Savya Bichara, is a reason which is not exclusively concomitant with one's thesis. Anai Kantika, in other words, it is the fallacious reason which leads to more than one conclusion. Right? So it means you're saying something and you're trying to prove your point, you give your reasoning, but the reasoning you give could possibly prove your point, but it could also prove something else. So then that's not a proper reason, because it should be the reason you use will establish what you're talking about, not that it'll establish something completely different. Footnote 28, an instance of erratic is given below. Proposition, sound is eternal, erratic reason, because it is intangible, right? So you're taking eternal intangible. Example, whatever is intangible is eternal as atoms. Application, so sound is intangible. Conclusion, therefore sound is eternal. Right? So the point is, but sound you can hear, it is tangible. So it doesn't actually make proper sense. They're trying to give that connection that atoms are intangible and they're eternal. So therefore sound is eternal like atoms. But the point being given is the intangibility of the atoms. Well, sound is not intangible. Right? Again, proposition, sound is non-eternal, right? So this is just the other. Sound is eternal, right? We've given that. Now here again, sound is non-eternal. Erratic reason, because it is intangible. Example, whatever is intangible is non-eternal as intellect, right? So now you're using something else. Intellect is intangible, but it's not eternal because it's a material element, right? So application, so sound is intangible. Therefore, sound is non-eternal, right? So the same point of it being intangible, you could prove it both ways in this because of the examples that's been given. So they're not connecting the correct example, you know, and the correct logic together. And so they can end up giving different things. Here, from the one reason, there have been drawn two opposite conclusions, namely that sound is eternal and that sound is non-eternal. The reason is defined as erratic when it is not pervaded by the proposition. That is, when there is no universal connection between the proposition and reason, as pervader and pervaded. Right? It means you have your reason that should be pervaded with the qualities of the object that you're talking about, and vice versa. So when you talk about it reasonably, it should be that the item itself has the qualities that you say. Like if I say the pillow is soft, then my reasoning is about the softness of the pillow. So it's solid, and the pillow itself also has that softness. So the two go together. Mm-hmm. Intangible is pervaded neither by eternal nor by non-eternal. In fact, there's no universal connection between intangible and eternal and non-eternal. But it's not that because it's intangible, it makes it eternal, or if it's intangible, it makes it non-eternal. It's not the reason you would use. You would use something else. Does that make sense? So you're using the wrong quality to explain something that doesn't actually apply to it, and it can be used for other things. So technically, because here, when you're getting, so this hetvabhasha, you can see is technically they're on the platform of nigrahasthana. They don't actually understand what they're saying. Like that. The fallacy called the Sutra 126, the fallacy called the contradictory, virudha, means a reason which is in contradiction with tat virodha, one's own accepted thesis, siddhanta, footnote 29, proposition. A pot is produced, contradictory reason, because it is eternal. Here the reason is contradictory because that which is eternal is never produced. Right? So that wouldn't work. Right? Then we have 127. The fallacy called counteracted, prakarana sama, is a reason which, when employed for final ascertainment, nirnayartam apadishta, gives rise to the suggestion, chinta, of doubtful alternative possibilities, prakarana. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. Prakarana means both thesis and counterthesis, which are equally doubtful and equally unascertained. Its example is like this. Sound is not eternal, because the characteristic of anything eternal is not perceived in it. Whatever is perceived as without the characteristics of anything eternal is found to be non-eternal, like the cooking pot, etc. Footnote 30. Sound is non-eternal, counteracted reason, because it is not possessed of the attribute of eternality. Non-eternal is the same as not possessed of the attribute of eternality, right? So then it also, you're giving the reason it's non-eternal because it doesn't have the quality of eternality. So that doesn't actually establish it. In determining the question whether sound is non-eternal, the reason given is that sound is non-eternal. In other words, the reason begs the question, right? So you're saying that, you know, that it doesn't actually, you're explaining that something isn't good because it's not good, you know? So, you know, at least in this, what do you call it, when you're dealing with sound and all that, that just doesn't work, you know? But if it's, if it's not an apple, it's not an apple. You know, that's solid reasoning, right? You know, like that. But the other way, here's the position, you know, that they're talking about is you're explaining something and then you're giving your reason for it is the same explanation. You haven't actually come up with other and showing the connection between the unknown and the thing that you're saying. Right? It's like that. Yes, Drishtanta can't have me because you didn't give any actual reason. You didn't give a proper reason. Okay. When a similar characteristic which causes doubt is used as a reason, it leads to a state of indecision, shamshaya sama, and it is the case of the previously defined fallacy called the irregular, savya vichara. But the dependence on the remembrance of the unique characteristic, Vishesha Pekshita, and the inability of perception of the unique characteristic in either of the alternatives, leads to thesis and counterthesis, prakarana, which forms the current defined fallacy called the counteractive. Right? So when you're giving a similar thing that causes doubt, that'll be the previous one. But when it just makes it where it doesn't match either one of them. You know, so you can't actually establish one or the, it doesn't establish yours and it doesn't defeat the others. Then that kind of reasoning doesn't, it's not useful.
All right.
Yes.
Can you please give an example? I just got lost.
Oh, well, it was like up at the top of the page. Sound is non-eternal. Or where do you put it? No, in the footnote. Excuse
footnote.
Me. Yeah. Sound is non-eternal. Then, because it is not possessed of the attribute of eternality. So you haven't actually established a given a reason. You've given your reason as what you said before. You know, it's you know, it's black because it's not white, you know, or it's not possessed of the quality of whiteness, so it's therefore it only has blackness, or because it's black. You know, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it's like circular logic. So it's like it's just going around. You're not explaining the thing itself. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like it. Or, you know, what has that got to do with it? What does your feelings have? How does that establish? Since when? Now we have to establish your feelings. And, you know, so it's going to be something where you're establishing, you're trying to establish the logic based on the point you just made, where all you do is restate your point.
Yes, Maharaj. So it basically doesn't contain any unique characteristic by which you can attribute it to that.
Yes. Okay. So that means also is that you've given something. It's like sound is non-eternal because it's not possessed of eternality. But the point is okay, but how did you establish that attribute is not there or it is there?
So you what are you saying is that they don't have valid praman?
Yes.
Yes.
Because
all these five, you don't have that, but it's just different kinds of it. So in other words, whenever they're giving their reasoning is bogus, it's hate vabasha. But it's giving here this five breakdowns so that you see the slight difference. Just like debate, it has three forms, because otherwise we would take any of these forms to be debate. But what we find is that, yes, they're all debate, but actually only one of them has real validity. The second one may end up in coming up to a conclusion, but the third one doesn't at all. So then the idea here is that you see the various kinds of ways that they don't properly establish their reasoning. Because you see, is that just like you have the thesis, then after the thesis, it's going to be hate to you. You're going to give your reasoning, right? And then if that's not appreciated, then you start giving your examples and that trying to bring about this Drishtanta. So what happens is, as you've made your points and all that, then the other person has a doubt. So he makes his point. But then when he gives his reason, it's not actually a real reason. Does that make sense? So then if he gives examples of this, it'll be even worse. You know, unless through his example, okay, that he might save it, but the point is this his reasoning was wrong. So
also, Maharaj, when we go into detail, we can say in this example there is no even middle term.
Okay.
There is only major and minor. You are not even establishing a middle term. There is no vyapti, but you just say that the major is connected to minor. That's it. In the first one, there is a middle term, but the vyapti is not strong because it's not unique, because it can prove otherwise also.
Okay.
There is a connection between middle and major term, but it is not strong enough because it can prove the opposite point also.
So the smoke could be a cloud.
If there is if there is smoke, there is always fire. Like, you know, but sometimes in some other things, like, you know, we can say there is smoke, So there must be fire. If you use the opposite way, it doesn't work. There can be fire without the smoke also.
Yes, okay.
You can't reverse it.
You can't
establish smoke as a major term and put fire as a middle term. Because there is fire, then there is smoke. There should be like, no, there should be smoke coming,
yeah.
But sometimes it's not so.
Yes.
So the vyapti aspect is not strong in the first one. In the third one, there is no vyapti at all, because there is no middle term. You're not even saying anything, any connection. You're not even establishing any connection between the major and minor.
Okay. Yes, what is it?
I remember one example from Jewish tradition. Could it be example of this type of hitvabash? The story is one person told, our Rabbi told me that that God talks with him. And second asked him, but why do you believe to you, Rabbi? And then that person answered, because I believe him, because God will not talk with the liar. Is it example?
Okay. Yeah, means it could be. Means if, because he's saying God doesn't have a life. So you see, his faith is strong, and it means there is the aspect, okay, God won't tell a lie and all that. But at the same time, is that still doesn't establish that God's talking to him. It just establishes that God doesn't, okay, you made the point that God doesn't tell a lie. So it's almost like another point. But there's no connection, like Prabhu said, there's no middle term to connect the two. So he has God talks to me and God doesn't lie. But what's the connection between God doesn't lie?
God will not talk with a liar. Means
he would not talk with a liar.
Yes.
Oh, not talk with a liar. I thought he said God wouldn't talk lies. Okay. So he wouldn't talk to a liar. So then it doesn't have the middle term. So then you have to establish that he's not a liar, you know. And so, you know, it complicates things. It's not a strong argument in that way. That's what we're meaning here. But, you know, we also have to see is that probably means the point, the reasoning would be like that. But then in this story, there's probably some other elements of who the person is, and their position, how they're respected, and all that. So just by them saying it, then they would be in the position of apta, so they would be like an authority in here. You know, so then you have that aspect of shabda. But if you're just, if that's already established, then this would work. But here it's what but Shain is talking about is that that's not an established point. It's just that you're saying this, and so then, it doesn't, because you don't have the connection between the two. You know, you have fire and you have the mountain, but what connects them? Why would you say there's fire on the mountain? You know, like that. So the point is, because there's smoke. Smoke's the middle term. Because you have the mountain, you have smoke. So then smoke's connected to fire. Therefore, then fire's connected to the mountain. You know, and then he said the previous one is it's mixed. So that your middle term is your fire. So then, okay, you have the mountain, you have fire, but we don't see fire. So then, you know, what would be there? How would we even be, why would we even be discussing it? You can say it's because when there's fire, there's smoke. But with fire, there's not necessarily smoke. You can't have a smokeless fire. So then it doesn't establish properly, like we said, the vyapti, it doesn't make that connection between the fire. I mean, it means the it's not making a connection between the mountain and the fire. Because you don't see the two, so it's not a real middle term. Then you're seeing the fire and the smoke. It only works where there's smoke, there's fire, but it doesn't work the other way. Where there's fire, there's the necessarily smoke. So it's not a strong argument. Does that make sense? Did that work also? Okay. Yeah? Huh.
It's interesting to see what is the logical of the logic itself, the Yana system, and it seems to be the one system where they are not
Where, oh.
We can't hear.
You can't hear. I'm hearing very nicely. Why can't you hear? Because these don't pick up for these, because it's working on the earphone. Oh, he doesn't hear you either. So then his point is he doesn't hear what you say. You don't hear what he says. So he, in his mind, it's equal and all that. You know, can see
then,
that.
It must mean one of them is a liar. Lapping. It must mean that one of them is a liar. They can't hear the other one.
Ah, what is a liar? Because they can't hear the other one. Because God wouldn't talk to them if they were liars.
I was just saying that the Umaraj is the middle term then. You can
ah,
connect.
That makes me the middle term, so I have to connect it. Okay, so you were just bringing up that point, keeping it in the line. Yeah, okay. Unfortunately, I don't remember what he said. So no.
Yeah.
Oh, by logic. Okay, say so you say it would be interesting to know is that logic, you know, from the followers of logic of Nyaya, that they themselves by the analytical process, what would they define as the weakness in logic? You know, as a school, you know, like that. So whether they can,
in the beginning,
we can do that.
In the beginning, they gave it, Maharaj, that logic, when it is not based on the Shabda, then it will be useless because it will not establish anything.
Okay. Got that then? No. No middle term. Okay. See, here's what it is. He doesn't understand the middle. He's saying that in the very beginning, then it established that logic, unless it's based on Shabda, then it, you can't, it won't work. So if you try to use it based on Anuman or Pratyaksha, you won't actually get a proper Siddhanta. So that would be also is that nowadays you see that so much discussion goes on that it, no basis in Shastra, you know, in modern logical way of thinking or political or economic or social. And so naturally, any arguments on that platform can't actually properly follow logic, or even if they do technically, it will never give you a proper, yeah, it won't give the Siddhanta. So you can't come to a conclusion. And they're designed like that. The modern academies decide there's no conclusion. Science is like that. You know, the modern politics, everything else is what could be this, that. It's just that we're in the seat, therefore we make it happen. You know, you should follow what we say.
Seems that everybody too. Comes up with a conclusion is immediately defined as a fundamentalist, say the conclusion is avoided and
yes. Yeah, saying that conclusion is always in the modern context is always avoided. Because anybody who does come up with a conclusion, they'll say he's a fundamentalist. And in one sense that's not a problem. They know the word. Fundamentalist means it's based on fundaments, you know, that it's the basis of what's going on. So unless you have fundaments like this or rudiments, it doesn't work, like numbers, mathematics based on these numbers, and that you can put the numbers together, you know, or divide, you know, take them apart and this and that. So those basic fundamental principles, then without that, you don't have math. So in that way, then we can. We're not overly worried that they'll say that to us about us. Yeah. Tulsi again finds that quite amusing. Is that okay? We're good? Ah, he waved his hand to confirm it. Because he has that picture there where he's smiling. So whenever we finish the conversation, we look at him and he's smiling. I think, okay, it's good. We're good. Okay.
I agree with everything, Maharaj.
Tulsi agrees with everything. Okay. So now are we good with that, or should we anything any more? No? Okay. Sutra 128. Sorry?
I'm saying I think it's okay, Maharaj.
It's okay. Sutra 128. The fallacy called the unproved, sadhya sama, is the reason which is in need of proof, sadhyatvat, in the same way as the proposition, sadhya. So you're giving your thesis, but then your reasoning needs proof to be proved also. So then it doesn't support your thesis, right? 31, proposition, shadow is a substance. This wouldn't happen to be from the book Shadow and Substance, would it? Well, maybe this is where he got his title from, right? Unproved reason, because it possesses motion, right? So shadow is a substance, so there's no connection because the shadow moves, therefore it is a substance, like that. Here, unless it is actually proved that shadow possesses motion, we cannot accept it as the reason for the proposition that shadow is a substance. Just as the proposition stands in need of proof, so does the reason itself. It is possible that the motion belongs to the person who causes that obstruction of light, which is called shadow. Right? So the shadow itself is not moving. It's the person that's moving. So then if that's there, is that because it possesses motion, then in that case, it just proves that the person has substance, but it doesn't prove that the shadow has substance. That we're good? Yeah.
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. 129. The fallacy called mistimed, kala tita, is a reason characterized by a peculiarity which is separated by, quote unquote, the lapse of time, kala tita. Kalat Yaya. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. Example, sound is eternal because it is manifest through conjunction, such as color. The color which exists both before and after being perceived is manifest through the conjunction between the lamp and the jar. Sound also, similarly existing, i.e. before and after being perceived, is manifested through the conjunction between the drum and the beating stick, or through the conjunction between the wood and the axe. Therefore, sound is eternal, because it is manifested through conjunction. Right? So this is their idea. You know, they're saying is that it's eternal because it's through this conjunction. When you match these things together, then you get this. But then you're seeing here is that it doesn't apply. Because the two don't match, it means the one follows the other, but it's not that at that moment it's there, because otherwise before that it wasn't there. Right? The reason, namely, being manifest through conjunction is a fallacy, because it is separated by the lapse of time. Perception of the color manifested through conjunction does not outlast the time of the conjunction. In other words, in the case of the color, its perception and the conjunction through which it is manifested are simultaneous. As long as the conjunction of the lamp with the jar persists, there's perception of color, right? Because when you have the lamp and you have the jar, then the light goes through the jar and like a prism, then makes some color, right? And so that color is only as long as the jar is in front of the lamp. You turn off the lamp or you move the jar, you don't get that. So it's only when that time it's right there, then it matches. Or saying like beating the drum, it's only when you hit it at that point, then you have the sound. But after that point and before that point, you don't. You know? So therefore, by time, it's not correct. You know, it may match right now in the present, but in the past and the future, you can't say it will. So therefore, you can't say that sound is eternal, because eternal means it has to function all these times. Right? Does that make sense? So also, this is used a lot, that you see something, just like I saw something, I remember seeing this once in one big meeting, that they come up and they say, okay, you know, this thing should be done. Okay, that's good. So who's going to do it? Then someone brings up a name. And then that name then immediately someone says, no, no, he can't do that. And why not? And then they say, 20 years ago, when he was temple president in this place, he did this. And so the time doesn't match. Okay, that was then, but how does that prove now he's doing that? Does that make sense? But because it sounds logical or things like that, you know, it seems to be a reason, but it's not. It's actually, you know, mistimed. Therefore, it doesn't work. Of course, the person didn't get the position because the mistimed reasoning somehow or another resonated with the assembly. But, you know, in other words, they didn't want him to do it, so they had a reason for it. But the reason is not correct. So, does that make sense? Yeah, it's an impression. Yes, it's frozen in time. Yeah, so it's frozen in time. Are you taking just not in the first one with the drum or the axe and the wood or the lamp, and then that is taking just the present, but in the past and the future you can't say. Or here it's that it happened in the past, you can't say it's going on now or in the future. Right? Or it's supposed to be in the future it's happening, but you know, the activities that should create it in the future aren't going on now or haven't gone on. You know, just like the idea that just meetings will work or socialism will work or capitalism, communism will work, but it's always talked about in the future it will work, but in the present and the past we don't see any examples. So that will be where it's mistimed. It doesn't, it's not established, because something is established as a rule because it following Krishna's laws, it works in the past and the present and the future. You know, or we'll say is that, oh, you can't do those things, you know, the Vedic, you know, that's not now, it's the modern age, so it doesn't work. But the Vedic is eternal, the modern is the temporary. So they're trying to attempt that this is the real, this is the substance, and the other thing, which is eternal, is not a substance. So they're the timing is wrong. Does that make sense? Yes, no.
Also, Maharaj, in this particular example, he's just trying to prove that his example and his reasoning doesn't match, that the connection between the perception of color and perception of sound is not the same because of the mistimed reason is in the context which he's speaking for this example is little slightly changing. But of course, the reasons which you are explaining all also falls in the same thing. But here it's, when we read the whole thing, it is a little bit different in the way he's taking, the angle he's taking, explaining this.
Okay, so even though it may do there, but it doesn't, because he's saying now this perception of sound is not caused by the conjunction because it outlasts the time of conjunction. So it's like on the drum. You hit the drum, you'll have a sound going, you'll hear the reverberation for some time, but the hitting of the drum is no longer there anymore. So you can't say it's the hitting of the drum because the sound is still there. So now what's causing that sound? You know, it'd have to be something else again.
Yes.
So then you have to prove all those different things.
Yes. So that's why your example doesn't match. On the other hand, the lamp and using the lamp to see the jar color, as soon as you remove the lamp, it's gone. So that it's not the conjunction that is causing the sound as a jar.
Okay. Is that very good? No? Okay. Thus, this reason, namely being manifest through conjunction, because the absence of similarity with the instance cited, i.e. color, is incapable of proving the proposition, and as such is only a fallacy. Riti. Next, the threefold forms of chala is elucidated. Sutra 1-10. Chala is the rebuttal of the arguments of the opponent by way of inventing a meaning contradictory to the meaning intended. Right? So chala is used to refute someone's argument, right? But it's by you invent a meaning to what they say rather than what they actually said. So we see is that chala is a very, very popular thing. You say something, they, oh, so then you mean this, you know. Riti. His Holiness Sahotraswami. Chala means unfair reply. Here it is used to designate a statement that is meant to cheat or to fool someone. In unfair reply, one takes a word or phrase that has been used in a particular sense, pretends to understand it in a sense other than that which was intended, and then denies the truth of this deliberate misinterpretation of the original speaker's words. For example, suppose someone's name is Bizarre, and referring to this person, someone says he is bizarre. If the listener knowingly misconstrues the statement, replies, he is not bizarre, he's just a common, ordinary man, then that person is using chala. Does that make sense? You take it out of its context. You give it another meaning. Because you took it from bizarre meaning, it's his name, to bizarre meaning a quality that he's a bit strange. Unique in that way. So you change the meaning, what the bizarre is meaning. Sutra 1:2-11. Chala is threefold. Purpose, distortion by resorting to ambiguity, vakchala, purposive. Or it's either way, depending upon.
Charachandra Brahma.
Although English is my first language, I have not mastered it, so I don't know that one. Sorry.
Okay, because I know that there's certain ones depending upon who's talking. So I know it's like generally sometimes general people would use it one way, and those especially if they're in the dramatic arts or the performing arts, then they have another way of saying it, and also sometimes academics use that. I guess it would be purpose. You mean because you'd have purpose?
Yes. Purposive. So.
Purposive.
It's purposive. The accent's on the first syllable, according to the dictionary. Purposive.
Oh, because you say purpose, you put it on the first.
Yeah.
Okay, because otherwise, purpose, it might come out.
Like preposterous.
Okay.
But yeah, so purposive is...
Purposive. Okay. Purposive distortion by resorting to ambiguity. You know, means it's not clear. Vakchala. Purposive distortion by resorting to similarity. Samanyachala. And purposive distortion of the secondary sense. Upacharachala. Right? So it's different ways you can create this distortion. 1:2-12. Purposive distortion by resorting to ambiguity, vakchala, is inventing a meaning opposite to what is intended by the speaker when he employs ambiguous expressions. Or, willfully taking the term in a sense other than that intended by a speaker who has happened to use it ambiguously, is vakchala. You know, because sometimes you're referring to something in a subtle way. And so then they purposely switch it to another application. Because if you make it very strong and distinct, then it's there. But sometimes some words can be adjusted, you know, like we saw in that bizarre thing. But also just sometimes you're saying that you're trying to say something in a very more subtle way, in that not so gross of a way. And then they can take it and try to make it gross or make it something else or this and that. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. It is asserted by someone, quote, this boy is Nava Kambala. Here the intention of the speaker is to mean this boy has a new Nava blanket, Kambala. Oh, so that's where it comes from. So kambal is coming from Sanskrit. Huh? The expression, namely Nava Kambala, though same in its compounded form, acquires different forms when expounded. Here, someone wanting to employ chala invents a meaning different from the one intended by the speaker. Thus, he accuses the speaker by saying, quote, "You have said that this boy has 9 Nava blankets, kambala." Right, because Nava can mean here a new, but it can also mean 9, right? Thus, inventing an opposite meaning, he refutes the speaker by pointing to an absurdity, namely, he has only 1 blanket. Where do you find the 9 blankets? Right, you know, you start harassing like that. This is an example of vakchala, because here distortion is affected by resorting to an ambiguous expression. Right, so it's something that could be means it's used in one way and everybody uses it that way, but you take it and use it another way. So it's always, it's especially fun to do that with people who don't know the language. They only know some words, and then you take it and switch it like that, and then they don't. It's always good fun. But here, it's, if you're using it as an argument, then it's not so good. Its reputation is this. Sorry?
Sorry. I remember when, I don't remember in which book, but Krishna was speaking with the gopis and they were asking him a question and yes. He was taking the words in a different way.
Yes, yes. So he was using this chala, like that. It's, I think, in Nectar Devotion. So it's one of Krishna's qualities. Forget which quality it was bringing out, maybe how intelligent he is or clever, maybe something. So he was bringing that out as how they would say the word and he would give it another, because every Sanskrit word has so many meanings. And some of them are quite different from the others. So they're used in a particular way that it's used, it means this. But it can be used in a literal way and mean something else. But you would see the context that it's used in. You know, so since the boy does not have 9 blankets, you wouldn't take it as 9 blankets. And the thing is, if it's not an old rag, it looks like a new blanket, then you would take it that Nava here, he means new. So then if you take it that there's not 9 blankets, it can't be shown by perception, but you say, why isn't he saying there's 9, there's only 1? But why would he make that statement? Unless you're joking with them or something. But if in an argument they use this, then generally not joking. It means if you're having some fun, then like that, like Krishna was with the gopis, then yes, it can be used quite nicely. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Its refutation is as follows. Since an ambiguous expression has various meanings, specific grounds need to be shown for the selection of any particular meaning of it. The expression Nava Kambala has different implications, namely, he has a new blanket and he has 9 blankets. When this expression is used by the speaker, the selection of the meaning, namely, he has 9 blankets, has been made by you without mentioning any specific ground for your selection. This is not permissible. So you just point out the chala to him is that you're saying this, but what are the grounds that this is what is there? Just like, you know, I think in English you also say putting words into your mouth. Someone's mouth, you know, you said this, and then they take it and take it into something else. But then you just pull them back and says, okay, this word can mean this, it can mean that. I'm meaning this. Why would you, what is the grounds for you taking and meaning that? Straw man. Okay. Oh, okay. You mean, okay, straw man argument meaning. Oh, okay, so it's a straw man, meaning they're making a straw man of you and then saying this and that when they're not actually talking about you. Straw man argument, okay. Okay. Okay, this is not permissible, but you have got to mention the specific ground for the selection of this particular meaning. The ground which restricts the expression to this specific meaning, i.e. which determines that this particular meaning is intended by this expression. There is no such specific ground mentioned by you, and as such, it is only a false accusation. But so it means the ground that restricts it to this means you're saying it's this, but you have to give the grounds why it means what you're saying and not what I'm saying. I'm saying it means, you know, new blanket, and you're saying it means nine blankets. What are the grounds that I'm saying nine blankets? Means how is it that it's been said, especially since we're looking at it, we only see one blanket. So that way you just say is that you've made this, you've taken this a step further when there's no grounds for it. Right? Okay. Yeah, good. Sutra 1.2.13. Purposive. Purpose of distortion by resorting to similarity, samanya chala, is inventing an absurd meaning, asambhuta artha kalpana, regarding the intended object by taking advantage of general characteristics being present in objects, other than the one intended by the speaker, ati samanya yoga, or ascertaining the possibility of a thing which is really possible, on the ground that it belongs to a certain group, which is very wide, called samanya chala. So you have it, they're mentioning about the thing. The thing has qualities that are much broader than what was just being talked about. You take another quality other than the one being mentioned, but it's attributed to that object, and then you take the other quality and then take it somewhere else, like that. See, it's similar kind of the last one, because it's chala, but that one's just vak. You're just you know, using the this word or that word. But here you're taking the meaning of it, or the quality within it, what it's talking about. Then shifting that. So basically, shift chala means it moves. You're taking it from here and moving it to there, and then saying this is what you're saying rather than this. Commentary by Vatsyayana Rishi. On listening to the assertion of somebody, namely, quote, this Brahmana has the accomplishment of behaving according to the norm of the learned, end quote. Someone else comments, the accomplishment of behaving according to the norm of the learned is but natural for a Brahmana. And then refutes the statement by one employing samanya chala with the invention of a meaning opposite to the one intended, i.e. by inventing an absurd meaning. Thus, he accuses the speaker by saying, the accomplishment of behaving according to the norm of the learned is natural for the Brahman, then this should be so even for a Vratya, a degraded Brahman. In other words, a Vratya also is a Brahman, and as such, he should also have the accomplishment of behaving according to the norm of the learned. Yeah, so he's saying, in the sutra, the word ati samanya means a characteristic which is present in the object intended as well as in other objects. Thus, for example, the characteristic of being Brahmana sometimes coexists and sometimes does not with the accomplishment of behaving according to the norm of the learned. This is called samanya chala because it's due to general characteristics, samanya. Its refutation is as follows. The second assertion, namely, the accomplishment of behaving according to the norm of the learned is but natural for a Brahman, is but a repetition of the theme asserted first with a view to praise only, and not for indicating a causal connection between being a Brahman and having the accomplishment. Right, so they're taking it into something else because they have a purpose that they want to do. You know, that's why it says purposively distorting. So then he has an idea that he wants to do because he wants to point out that particular characteristic. You're just trying to say that this person behaves like a Brahmin. But they're taking it that Brahman can, you know, they should behave like that, but how can we say this so he should behave like a Brahman? So either you're removing the credit he has for behaving like a Brahman by just saying, of course Brahmins behave like Brahman. What's the big deal? point is he's doing that, so that should be appreciated.
Also, Maharaj. Maharaj?
Yes.
This particular one, most of the times the devotees use. He says devotees are supposed to behave like, no, ideally, but we see this is, some particular devotee did something, so that means all devotees are wrong. Because of that, then I need not follow any rule.
Yeah, yeah. It means you find a fault in one and then attribute it to everyone. Okay. Yeah, in the general category. That's the thing, general characteristics, samanya. You know.
And this is very famously used by all the devotees, I mean, those who don't want to follow any rule.
Yeah.
Like, if he sees any discrepancy anywhere, see, here is discrepancy. So.
Yes, yeah, so then I don't have to follow.
If I am not following a rule, that still doesn't deter my position. I am still a great personality.
Yes. Okay. Then the statement, namely, the accomplishment of behaving according to the norm of the learned is natural for a Brahmin, indicates that being a Brahmin is related to the accomplishment and not that it is the cause of the accomplishment. Right. So that's the thing. So not related to the cause. He's just saying it's being a Brahmin. The cause is not meant here. It is only a state of restatement because it is simply intended to be a praise. Namely, the possession of the accomplishment is appropriate in the case of being a Brahmin. The statement intended to be in praise of something does not negate the production of the effect in accordance with its cause. Hence, refutation of a statement by inventing an absurd meaning is not tenable. So then you have the aspect that he's not talking about, he's just trying to praise the person, so he's saying he's behaving like a Brahmin. But yes, of course, Brahmins are supposed to behave like Brahmins. So then what's the purpose of the other person? He doesn't want to acknowledge the praise. Otherwise, why make the point? You know, of course, he's a Brahmin, he should act like that. You know, but then if that's the case, then one saying of that is not a praise anymore. It's a criticism. You know, of the perspective. But then according to that, then Vaishnavas don't criticize. So therefore, then by that, you would not be a Vaishnava. You know, so it means you can go so many directions with this. Does this make any sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Yeah? At least for me.
Makes sense for you. Anyone else? Or? Yeah. I can't quite tell if I, because I only see like from the eyebrows up. Okay, so is it okay? Yeah, okay. So then, so we'll stop here for today. And then this leaves us with
yes, Maharaj, 2 pages.
Just the last one of Chala. And then
Jati Nigrahasthana is also there.
Okay, Jati and Nigrahasthana. Okay, so hopefully those, we can finish those tomorrow. And then next week we can go back to the Sandarbha.
Okay,
man. Okay, I hope. Thank you very much. See you all tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. There you go.